is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And the perfect place for me today, because I am so happy I have two guests in the studio. It's always so exciting. Carol J. Perry is here because she has a new book released today. And hi, Carol. Tell us the name of the new book.
Good morning, Patsy. It's Bells, Spells, and Murders.
And it is her Christmas book coming out early so that everyone can have it before and get into the spirit with a really wonderful, cozy mystery. And I also have my special correspondent right here, Rita Moreau. And Rita is the author of a wonderful series of cozies, too.
Yes, I am. And thank you. And hello, Patsy. And hello, Carol. And happy to be here.
Okay. And Rita is also known as Radio Rita. Because she does our book buzzes. And she's going to do her first live book buzz today. Wow. Okay. That's something to look forward to. And right now, I'm going to have on the phone an author who I admire so much. And it's really exciting to have her with us today. Mindy Tarquini has just come out with a new book. It's also released today. It's called Deepest Blue. Mindy, are you there?
I sure am, Patsy. Hi.
Okay. Well, everything's working. The electricity's on. And here you are. And I am so happy to welcome you back to Joy on Paper. As you heard, I have two guests in the studio. And I wanted so much to talk to you. I always love to talk to authors on their release date. I don't know if you keep a record, but I always feel, ooh, man, I put it in right inside the book. I was there on that day, and whoa, this new book is something. It is a really great book.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear that.
You know, it's so funny. The first time I read you was your first book, Hindsight. And I fell in love with that book. First of all, there is nobody else who can make Chaucer interesting. And I thought, what a perfect idea. And we're going to get back and talk about that first book after a while. But let's talk now about Deepest Blue. Wow. Where did you come up with the idea for this? The insiders, the outsiders? Woo, it's got a lot in there.
You know, every writer has like this process they go through with every single book. And Deepest Blue was born like 15 years ago or 10 years ago or something, in kind of this mad rush of writing. And it was like this sort of like medieval Italian soap opera. It was like I was channeling As the World Turns. And it was too much. It was just too much. It was too over the top. So I put it under a bed, you know, for a while. And then somebody like had asked, you know, I started taking it to critique groups, thinking, you know, it's a good story, some good bones. You know, what should I do with it? And then I thought, oh, I'll turn it into a comedy, like a slapstick comedy, and that didn't work. And I just didn't want to like turn it into historical, so I put it away again. And then I was on the way to San Diego. I still remember this. I was on the way to San Diego, and it was popping into my head. I didn't quite know what to do, and I was thinking about Italo Calvino, who, you know, take stories and they're very whimsical and magically realistic. And I was thinking about him and I thought, maybe I could make this a fairy tale. So I kind of hopped on the internet and I started reading up on Italian fairies, and I found out their favorite color was indigo. Well, what's the title of my story? And that's when I started having this idea of a fairy tale. But it came up with the idea of outside and inside much later. We suffered a loss in my family, a terrible loss. I guess you figured out it's a story about grief, correct?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And I was musing on this. This is after, I had just finished my second book and sent it off to my editor, The Infinite Now. And I was in Italy at the time. I'm kind of walking the streets. So I pulled it out again, and I took a look at it with fresh eyes, and I thought, you know, this isn't like a medieval soap opera. This is the story of a family who thought their destinies were all set, that their stars were on the rise, and, you know, they suffer a loss, and they get sent into the spiral that they struggle every day to get right, like to, you know, their world's tilt, their courses are wobbling, and every day they're struggling to get it right. And it occurred to me this wasn't a story about outside. It wasn't about events. It wasn't about, you know, it wasn't the events that drove the brothers, but it was the emotion inside that made up the architecture of their lives. And I suddenly thought, I've got my setting. This isn't a story about outside. It's a story about inside. And that's where outside and inside came from.
Well, I love, of course, since you are Italian American, you have all these wonderful Italian names in your books, and I so love it because one of my in-laws is Italian, and when I was a kid, I worked in an Italian restaurant, and so I so relate to the names. The minute I start reading your books, I say, "Oh, I like that." I used to work with somebody with those names. It just adds a great depth to the stories.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and they're just so musical, and it seems, you know, and it goes with the, you know, they've all got powers. Each of these brothers has a special power, and they're all, it's all kind of musically and lyrically combined, the three of them together. So thank you. Yeah, I get a kick out of the names too.
Yeah,
it takes me back to when I was young.
As a matter of fact, do you play a musical instrument? Because you have so many musical references in here, and I love it.
Well, I do. I play piano badly, very badly. My children both play better than me. So yeah, that's where I learned all those terms. So all those lessons, not wasted. Those years of lessons.
It's lovely. As a matter of fact, my son, because he played the piano when he was young, his first words that he read were all Italian. And he was like 2 years old, and he's reading the Italian words on music sheets. And then that's when I said, well, if he can read the Italian, why can't he read English? And so I started teaching him English. You know, but it's so funny. And so it's just, I think it has such, it makes it lyrical, as really because of these words. Italian words just have this wonderful flow. And so I just love it. And as a matter of fact, one of my favorite characters is the one in, you have to pronounce her name in hindsight. Name the professor.
Oh, yeah. Eugenia Panasporky.
It's such a great name. And the first time I read it, and then I read her name, and then I realized it's got Chaucer in it, and I think, wow. As a matter of fact, one of the things in this book, you right in the beginning, you mentioned photosynthesis, because you're trying to explain this world and how they see things and how they understand things and the beauty of things and the beauty of nature. And I thought, wow, if in school when you know, teachers start with all these words, and kids say, "Well, why do I need to know about photosynthesis?" They should read that first chapter and say, "Okay, look what this lady did. She knew about photosynthesis, and she writes a hit book."
Besides, you never know when you have to make a tree.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. You need this stuff.
Well, you know, I think you're an amazing author, and I really want everybody to get this book. It's called Deepest Blue. And one of the reasons is because I think you tell an amazing story. You know, we talked a little over a year ago, and one of the things I remember is that your first book was like about a million words or something to that effect.
And you know, you'll see that book someday. It's no longer a million words, and but that was the one I cut my teeth on, and it was written during that lovely time when I knew nothing about publishing or writing, and who cared? I was just telling a story.
You just sat down and wrote, and it all came out, and right?
Yes. It was. I had so much fun with it. I do go back to it and I work with it. On Sunday, it's going to come out. It'll be part, it's part of the series, and I kind of call it my crack cocaine fantasy series because I keep going back to it.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And you know, one of the things is I as I said, I have two authors here with me, and. I don't. Did you guys say hi?
We did say hi.
Oh, yeah. You said hi. Okay, because I want you to talk a little bit about the editing process, because so many of the my listeners are people who want to write, but they don't understand that there's more to than just getting the words on the page. What? Tell me about the joys of editing.
If you need to be edited, if you don't have a process for how you write, I mean, I know a lot of people are pantsers, and that's what I was. And for me, that meant a million words, of which that, you know, it's, I'm still 15 years later messing with. I start before I write with an outline, and I find all my turning points. I put all my tent poles in and the basics, you know, the plot turning points and the pinch points. Then I start to fill in, and I'm very... if you look at this book, it's just structured to the max. I'm very picky about where everything goes, the exact placement of everything. And I'm one of those types that does all of that ahead of time. I do my editing of the plot. All of it happens ahead of time so that I'm free to write. And for me, that frees me up. I always know where I'm going and what's coming next. After that, you're editing for all kinds of things, for word repeats, for ridiculous sentences. You know, you say something and it makes, when you look at it on reflection, it makes no sense. You know, he entered the scene with a blue shirt, he left the scene with a pink shirt. You need to fix things like that. But this is a very intense, writing is intense. Editing, I think, is even more intense because that's it. You know, once you push that button and it goes to your editor, you're done. I mean, you might get chances, you know, you're going to get a few chances there to fix anything. You know, you get a couple more chances, but it's at some point it goes to print and you're finished. And the last thing you want is some reviewer saying, you know, he had a pink Cadillac at the beginning here, and when he finished, it was a green one. You don't want that. You just don't want that ever to happen.
You're writing, as I said, it right across the board for the three books that I've read of yours, there is a kind of gentleness to your writing that I find relaxing. Perhaps it partly it is that it's seamless. The transition seems seamless from one scene to another. And I always like to say when an author writes and the writing is solid, you don't have to worry about anything. You're just flowing along with the story, so there's nothing sort of harsh that interrupts the flow of the story, and you certainly have achieved that.
Well, thank you. That's the result of hard work to any writers out there. It's you know, I read my stories aloud to myself. I have a program that reads it back to me if I can, you know, corral some poor hapless friend to read it to me so I can hear it in a totally different voice. I'll do that. I read it back. This is going to sound strange. I read it backwards. Like, I'll read the last chapter, and then I'll read the next to the last chapter, because at each point I'm also looking for, you know, sometimes transition things will happen where I'll be like, oh, that doesn't make any sense what he just said, because there's nothing in his previous chapter that supports what happened in the next chapter. So I have a million and one techniques. So I'm glad it reads so easily. That is the product of a lot of hard and intensive work. And I'm sure the other authors with you right now will attest that that's the case when they do their own work. It's very hard.
Carol, what about you with your...
if this was easy, everybody would do it. I write... I have to write 1,000 words a day in order to make the next deadline, because I do two of these a year. And I edit as I go along, and then when I feel it's ready for the next edit, I print it all out, I take my red pen and my printed out manuscript, and I go across the street to the library and find a comfortable chair by the window, and then go through it with the red pen. It might take a couple of days to do that. And then go back and fix it again. Then it'll get one more final edit with me until it all seems to make sense. And then, as you said, then you know, there comes a point where you have to push that button and send it, and you go, do I hit send or delete? And there comes a point when you think you're all done, and then you go, oh, this is the worst piece of crap I ever wrote. And then you read it again and say, this is so good, why aren't I on the bestseller list? And it's fun, and it's frustrating, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. I love it.
Well, that's why I call this program Joy on Paper, because I love to hear authors talk about their writing and to hear the joy in their voices. And then we recently had here in Florida, in our area, we're here in Clearwater, BoucherCon, which is the big mystery writer convention. And I had the opportunity to meet many, many readers and to get the idea from their perspective of what they're looking for in a book and how excited they are when they find a book. And like I am, I've read so much, and I still get so excited when I read a book that just flows. And I want everyone to have that same feeling. And so I love all of you authors out there, and all of you people who are trying. And like Rita Moreau here is, she's got, she's written now, how many books have you written, Rita?
Four.
And we've got some more, she's got some more ideas coming up. But isn't it wonderful to have that feeling of joy that you get from finishing a book?
Yes, it is. Gosh, that is inexplicable. It's almost like watching a miracle happen, because, you have the outline, I mean, at least for me, I have this outline, and it's so expanded, and if I showed you the outline, you'd probably be horrified. Like, I should have a pencil protector in my pocket. I really should. But, it's all fine until you breathe life onto the page. Because an outline only can take you so far, people are not going to buy your outline. And you're like, oh, what a lovely outline. And that's always that big fear, is can I breathe life onto the page? Can I give each character a distinct personality? Can they become real people on the page? Because my goal is not just to put real people on the page in real situations, no matter where their setting is, outside or inside, but also that those characters will step off the page and follow the reader around for a while. And that's when I'm most gratified, when someone says, I can't stop thinking about it. Or, she's in my head talking to me. Yes. And that's when I'm thinking, I've done it, yes. That's it. That is total joy when that happens. So, yes, when you get to the end and you type the end, it's like, yes. I can't even explain it any better than that.
Well, I will say that there's one of your characters. Well, I remember all of your characters, but there's particularly a character, Fiora. Wow. That, anyone who reads The Infinite Now, which, and she was, of course, the main character, will never forget her. You have done a terrific job with her.
Thank you so much. I think, young people identify with her because she's their age. And then I think older people identify with her because, well, she's like them when they were younger. But also, they feel kind of motherly towards her. They kind of want to help her along in this journey, watching her kind of stumble through, trying to figure it out, having caused the big problem, trying to fix her problem, and her wish to be independent, her wish to move forward in a time period when women didn't, when they were just starting to have those inklings that they wanted to do something more with their lives. So thank you so much.
Well, it's, as I said, I always love to promote the current book that an author is releasing, and Deepest Blue is your newest book, and it's available, everybody, wherever books are sold. But I also like to remind people that they can get the other books, the books that came before it. And you learn, first of all, you learn so much about the author because each story is special to them. And I know that your second book, which is The Infinite Now, was particularly special because it was part of your research into your whole family genealogy. And it's a very touching book, and I hope people will get that book too, because when I was reading, I was thinking, wow, you've done, you know, work into your genealogy, and it sort of spurred me on to think about doing the same for myself.
Did I send you down a rabbit hole? I do that to people. They, you know, I actually had a neighbor who I found something. He'd been looking for years for a grandfather, and, you know, once you learn genealogy, it becomes kind of second nature. So I said, well, give me his name. I'll see what I can find. So 5 minutes later, I was emailing him this information, and so I saw him recently, a few months ago, and he said, I just want you to know. He says, first off, you brought me to tears, you know, because you found my grandfather I hadn't been able to find forever. But that sent him down a rabbit hole with Ancestry.com. And he says, now I'm like, every time I meet somebody, I like, what village was your family from? He says, I'm contacting complete strangers, like, hey, we're cousins. And he was just really excited, but he's like, it's like you gave back my family to me. And I'm like, all I did was spend 5 minutes.
Well, it's part of the joy of reading is that you discover all these things. Which reminds me, did you find your cousins when you were in Italy?
We weren't in that part of Italy. I want to go back next year. I'm sort of hoping I can maybe do that. I have been in contact with people from the one area, Nerado, there in the Brixies, which is where I decided Fiora's family, her village, was from. And, like, you know, every relative so far has turned out we can't find the common ancestor. I know we are, but I think it's hard. Well, like,
you have to go back to Italy because, you know, David Baldacci went back to found his family village, and now they have an annual David Baldacci Day.
Oh, that's funny. You know, I did find somebody on a Facebook group that I want to ask if we. I have a feeling she might be a descendant of a great uncle who didn't come over.
You know, so you probably have cousins, and they'll have a Mindy Tarquini Day, and they'll have floats and parades, and, you know, it'll be exciting.
Oh yeah, that would be if it happened. Your mouth got here.
Well, if they do it for David Baldacci, and he doesn't even write stories about Italians, and you know, excuse me, they should definitely do a day for you.
You know, I do wonder if people who live in Careri, because that's the living town now in Italy. Panduri is a ghost town. It's actually there. I mean, did you read the story at the end about where the place came from and how I kind of got the basic idea? It's actually there. But I joined, I think, the Careri kind of Facebook group, but I've actually been chickened. I think, I wonder if any of them are, like, Googling their town and this strange woman in the United States, you know, and this book is popping up and they're wondering what that's about, because it's very hard to find information on these two towns. I actually had to go to Google Italy and read it all in Italian, most of the information I got.
Well, I'm telling you, this is something you have to look into, because then it would be really exciting. You can announce it here on Joy on Paper. I never have breaking news, but when they decide to name a special day for you, you can come back on Joy on Paper and announce it, okay?
Oh yeah, that would be great.
I think
we'll
be
put
fun.
That in the Sunday bucket. Okay.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Mindy, for being on Joy on Paper today. What is your website for people to see?
It's World Wide Web. It's MindyTarquini.com.
And Tarquini is T-A-R-Q-U-I-N-I.
And just like on the book. And, you know, you can catch me on Twitter, normally just yelling at my congressman. I do have a Facebook an author page over at Facebook. It's Mindy Tarquini Author. And, you know, that's probably the best place for keeping up on all the news. And if you go to my website, drop me a little note on my Facebook page and say, you did a great job with it, Mindy, because I think that's like my hobby, redoing that web page.
Well, yeah. I think you've done a beautiful job with the new book. And as I said, I really hope that people will go and back and read The Infinite. Now, you know, the wonderful thing, isn't it wonderful about the Internet? and in being a writer in these days, that people can find your books that you wrote before. Because in before, you know, years ago, we'd have to go and dig in bookstores to find people's
and
books.
And libraries. And yes, check those card catalogs if they have anything else that they've written. You know, the incident now is very timely this year because it is the 100th year. It's the end of, you know, the century mark for the pandemic.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So, anybody's getting flu symptoms, go get the infinite now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That'll make you go out and get that flu vaccine.
Oh, absolutely. When you read about that one, then definitely everybody's going to get their flu vaccine. So just I want to thank you again for being on Joy and Paper, and everybody's enjoyed listening to you, and we'll have you back again soon. I'm sure you're working on the new book.
I sure am.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye now.
So thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, she's sweet. She's sweet. As I was saying, that's her second book, The Infinite Now. It is set in 1918 and during the pandemic.
Sure.
And her main character is a little girl that they just sort of abandoned. And the story goes on from there. And it's a fascinating story. So that's another story that we would like people to read. Oh, my goodness. Are we going to do... Let's do a commercial break, and then we'll come back, and we're going to have a live book buzz when we come back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Want to remind everyone that on Thursday, Bill Larson from Larson & Larson will be here to answer your intellectual property questions. If you have a question, go to my website, www.deradio-joyonpaper.com, and there's a form on the front page, and just submit your question, and Bill will be happy to answer it. Bill Larson is my patent attorney, as well as doing all of the intellectual property. I have 4 patents. I tell you, if you have a patent, if you have an idea for a patent, do not, please, I am begging you. I have 4 patents, and Bill Larson has helped me get those 4 patents. Do not submit your patent to somebody on television who says they will help you get your patent, because they will not. They will steal it. Please don't do that. This is, I cannot tell you how many times I have talked to people who have sent their things. Do not do that. It's not the way to do it. If you have an idea, something that you think is patentable, go to Bill Larson, and he will do it the proper way, and you will have something in your hands that maybe you can sell and maybe you can make money, but you will not get it by doing one of these things that you hear on television. Okay, now I am here in the studio with two of my favorite local authors, Carol J. Perry, and she's here to talk about her new book and also about BoucherCon, and Rita Moreau, who is going to do a live book buzz. So if we have...
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery, Bells, Spells, and Murders, a Witch City Mystery by author Carol J. Perry debuts today, and here's the buzz. Lee Barrett has landed her dream job at Salem's Witch TV. As a new field reporter, she'll be covering events live as they're unfolding. Next on her holiday checklist is an interview with the beloved chairman of a popular walking tour through Salem's historic districts. But it may be his ghost walking this snowy Noel season after Lee finds him murdered in his stately offices, bloody Santa hat askew. With her police detective boyfriend working the case and a witch's brew of suspects, including some bell-ringing Santas, Lee chases down leads aided by her wise cat, Orion, who I love, and some unsettling psychic visions of her own. When a revealing clue leads to another dead body, not even a monster blizzard can stop Lee from inching closer to the truth, and a scoop that could spell her own demise this killer Christmas. But don't take it from me. From RT Book Reviews, an entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry has done it again in Bells, Spells, and Murders, just in time for the holidays. This is Rita Moreau, also known as Radio Rita, reporting for Joy on Paper.
I didn't know you were going to do that. That's so good.
It sounds like a good book.
It
is.
It does. Well, we wanted to surprise you, Carol.
Oh, you did.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Rita and I were at a signing once. We happened to be next to one another. Her kid was next to mine. And Rita had one of her nun books, and she was dressed as a nun, and I had one of these, and yes. I was dressed as a witch, and we got our pictures taken a lot.
We did. Well, and I still have those pictures.
It's clever marketing. Yeah. That's what you have to
do
in this business.
We didn't plan it. It just worked out.
It just worked out. Yes.
So, Carol, tell us about this new book. It's come out earlier than normal because we want it in time for Christmas.
Yes. My publisher, Kensington, requested that I do a Christmas book, which I hadn't thought about doing before, but I do as I'm told. And so I had to think of course, I have to murder somebody right up front, and you try to do it as nicely as possible at Christmas. So it isn't, because none of the cozy mystery murders are graphic or bloody or anything. Well, a little blood. Never hurt anybody in these books. But it was a challenge. It was fun to do. I was interested in your previous interview, I was talking about how the satisfaction, how the characters stay in your head. And every once in a while, I feel as though I'm taking dictation from them because I know them so well. I'm on book nine, and they seem to speak to me. And I was telling a friend about this, and of course, these are regarded as psychic or paranormal mysteries. And I was telling my friend about it, and I said, you know, sometimes I really feel as though they're talking to me. And she said, Carol, you do realize there's something sort of paranormal about that. And I guess it is, but I love it when that happens. And I am doing 1,000 words a day. I'm trying to create this habit. Speaking of nuns.
And pray for you.
And it is working for me, and it gets easier as the characters feed me more information. And just recently, I had Lee down in the lower floor of the studio at WICH-TV, and it's kind of dark down there when they're on a national feed, so she was looking for something, and all of a sudden, she hears a voice say, "Is somebody down here?" And I didn't know who that was. And I went out to lunch and I came back, and then by then I knew who had spoken to her, and it was Scott. You remember Scott? Oh, we don't like him very much, but it was Scott. And I thought, oh, this really is paranormal, because I didn't know who it was when I wrote that. So the whole creative process is an adventure every time. And people say, aren't you tired of these yet? And I say, no. If I got tired of them, I guess I would stop doing that particular.
It's hard to leave them.
Yeah, and Salem is everything takes place in my hometown of Salem, Massachusetts, the witch city.
Because you were born on
Halloween Eve. The publicity department at Kensington liked that a lot, too.
It's cool.
It is. It really is. And it's always a party. So it's just been a wonder. I thought I started out as strictly a nonfiction writer. I was an ad copy writer. That was my real career in stringing words together and getting money for them. And then when I sort of retired, I began writing a lot of times for trade magazines. I wrote for, I know you're all familiar with these, handbags and accessories, luggage and leather goods. Yeah, sign craft.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, yes, I know you're a big fan.
Thrilling, yes.
And but also, that's a pretty good market. People who are just beginning writing and they want to get some clips, don't overlook the trade magazines, because everyone you know, that's in any, your florist has one, your hairdresser has one, and your plumber has one. Everyone has them, and they're looking for writers, and they pay reasonably well, moderately well. And it's a bunch of clips, and you learn more about your craft. I wrote travel. I've written about.
You wrote a lot about antiques, which I know
I
you
still
use,
do.
And yes, and you use those in your storylines, which
do.
Are really always. It always adds. I love when an author has something special mm-hmm. that they include in their books. Like Carolyn Hart always talks about the trees and the
Hart.
Flowers in her books.
Yep.
And I love how you always bring in antiques and in an interesting way. So I like when I come away from a book, I want to know something, a little bit more, something, you know, we have all these brain cells. And it is so important that we try to fill them up with something, because you never know when one of them will be activated and will come back and sort of bounce around in there and help you solve a problem mm-hmm. or fill in an area where you wanted a great description and you've got that information.
Or just learn something new.
Yeah.
I like to learn, even just going to a writer's conference, even no matter how many you go to, everyone you go to, you will come away with one wonderful, I never thought of that.
Exactly.
Idea
exactly.
Or skill or something that you didn't know how to do before. And it's been a wonderful golden years. I never thought I'd be a novelist, but there I am.
Not just a novelist, a famous novelist now, going on your ninth book mm-hmm. and going strong. And Rita is there. Rita is your, tell us a little bit about your main character, because you have nuns incorporated into your story, which is why she dresses up as a nun, not because she's strange or anything like that. She does it for marketing purposes.
No, I am strange.
And marketing purposes, it's secretly, ever since I saw the nun story, you know, do you remember that movie with Audrey Hepburn? And she's, you know, a nun. I just would like that feeling for a few minutes of wearing looking like a nun. So, but you do it quite often now in your presentations.
Well, I do, and I do it as a marketing, and it's kind of fun, especially those of us who are familiar with nuns. We're usually afraid of nuns. But, yeah, it's the Mary Catherine Mahoney Mystery Series. I started out writing, and I think they normally say, sit down and just write. So I did, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote. And I have learned quite a bit over the years with my four books. But like Carol, I love writing. I really do. It's a very solitary thing. And it's a lot of hard work, but it's very rewarding.
And now your main character is not a nun, actually an IRS, yes. former IRS agent. Not unlike yourself.
Not unlike myself, yes, she is, and she tripped over some big shoes, and she was shown the door, and so she goes back home to the fictional town of Fish Camp, where she hooks up with her two Greek aunts, Aunts Anta and Aunt Sophia, and a whole slew of characters have come along, including Sister Hildegard and Sister Matilda.
Well, that's one of the fun things about having authors around is that they're filled with so many characters. they don't have to just talk about themselves. They can talk about their characters for hours because they know them so well.
Yeah.
And, of course, I cannot let it pass for a moment without mentioning Carol has an aunt in her story, Aunt Ibby, who is one of my favorite fictional characters.
You're going to really enjoy the next book after this one called Final Exam, and that's Aunt Ibby's book. She's really in it all the way through. Every once in a while, like It Takes a Coven was kind of River North's story, the tarot reader, but the next one has a lot of Aunt Ibby in it, including the recipes. Kensington likes recipes in their books, and Aunt Ibby cooks nicely, and we usually include one or two of Aunt Ibby's recipes. And the antiques, you were mentioning the antiques. You might notice that I have given Lee the stuff I really want.
Yeah.
Lee's the one with the Lucite, the 1970s Lucite kitchen set.
Yes.
Which I saw once in an antique shop and wanted it so badly. And I didn't happen to have $3,000 to spend on a kitchen set. But Lee does.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. So I give her those things. And one of my early jobs, when I was 13, I worked as a guide, a docent, you'd call it now, at the Robes Memorial Mansion, which is where I picked up my love of antiques, because they had all this wonderful. It was a house that four generations of Salem people had lived in and loved, and that's where I mostly learned about it. And I still occasionally write about antiques, and I do miss the nonfiction writing sometimes. But this month, I called Bruce Causey, who's the editor of Antique Shop newspaper. And I said, Bruce, do you have room for a little short article about Salem Witch Antiques for the October issue? And he said, well, if you can write it and get it in today with the photos. So I said, oh, I can do that. So I did. But the reason I did it is I wanted to tag it with Carol J. Perry happens to be the author of this Wood City Mysteries. So
that's good marketing.
A little promotion, and I got to do a little piece of nonfiction.
Uh-huh. And I'm sure Rita is going to. Do they have the IRS Digest?
I bet they do.
For IRS agents, stories from the depths. Wait, you know that could be very funny.
It could be.
I'm sure.
Be the alphabet. Oh. IRS, FBI, CIA.
Oh boy. Yes, Yeah, but we don't want to go into horror fiction right now. I do get some really great horror books. As a matter of fact, I got one that was sent to me for Halloween, and it's so horrible. I don't know, horrible horror that I'm reading the first few pages and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, it couldn't get worse. And so I read another three pages. Maybe it's not. And then I realized, I can't read it. I'm sorry.
Scary.
It's too scary. There's sometimes
I can't read those. They scare me.
There was a limit. There's a limit. And I couldn't do it. And I feel so bad. And I know the author does listen to me. And he has written other books. And I will, as a matter of fact, he's written some historical mysteries. And I will have you on for the next historical mystery. But I couldn't handle horror. I really couldn't. It's like, I could not go to the movie theater and see some of these movies. The Chainsaw Massacre. It's too much. I wouldn't enjoy my popcorn. and I do love to have popcorn. But speaking of sort of popcorn and films, I have really over and over. The minute actually I started reading your Carol's books, I said this should be a series. And on television, and I'm hoping that at some point Hallmark there is going to pick it up because what I think it'd be.
I have that on my vision board.
Yeah, anyway. You should have it on your vision board.
Got a dream.
You know, when you get up to, you actually have to have that many books for them to start getting interested. Yeah. They want to know that there's a long, you know, long shelf life to a series. So you're getting there. You're getting there.
One hopes.
Yeah.
Why not?
And why not? You know, you have to keep trying. And the funny thing is, we both all of us had so much fun at BoucherCon, and we want to give a special shout out to the BoucherCon people because they did a terrific job at this event. And to have mystery writers from all over the world come, I was so thrilled. And over the next few months, so many are going to be on my program, and one of them, and we're going to have another Book Buzz Live, Ed, if you don't mind pulling up the music, we're going to do another Book Buzz, because this one is from a woman that I met at BoucherCon. She is absolutely delightful. She's Welsh, and she lives in Vancouver now, and I'm inviting her on the program, but Rita's going to do a special Book Buzz for her. So if Ed can pull up the music for it, we'll do that too.
Suitor by Kathy Ace. And here's the buzz. The Wise Inquiries Agency features five women sleuths with various backgrounds in all walks of life. They have banded together to sleuth crimes. This is the fourth book in the series, and the setting is an annual croquet tournament held at the home of the Duke of Twist and his wife, the Duchess. At a tea held at the estate, many guests come down with a suspicious stomach bug, and the next day a much-beloved physician is found poisoned. The women of the Wise Agency need to locate the answers to this unsettling stomach issue before tea time. Born and raised in Wales, Kathy Ace is the author of The Case of the Unsuitable Suitor, featuring a quartet of female PIs working from a Welsh stately home. If you are looking for a traditional and entertaining cozy, then sit down with a cup of tea and enjoy. This is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper.
Okay, thank you, Rita. Kathy Ace was so delightful at BoucherCon, and as a matter of fact, one of the things she did, she gave us all a beautiful, beautiful kitchen towel of recipes, Welsh recipes. And as you said, Kensington loves recipes, and so it's I love to have recipes in books. And I know, Rita, you can do that.
And I do. I have Greek recipes in my books because I love Greek food.
Yeah, Greek food I don't know everything. Well, Carol has some really good recipes in there from Aunt Ibby.
Yep. Some of them are traditional New England recipes and some Aunt Ibby and I invented. And some come from my mother's old, speaking of card catalogs, you know, those little wooden boxes with the good ones have egg stains and stuff.
Oh, yes. The more stains, the better. Yeah. I think that's just, that one was pulled out over and over and over years and years.
And, and one of the women that Aunt Ibby was based on was my second mother-in-law. And she had her mother's recipes. And hers were in a loose-leaf notebook. And the heading was, never fail chocolate cake, and there was a big X through it.
Okay.
So clearly it did. And I was interested in Mindy's talking about the musical Italian names. Being born in Salem, there were lots of Polish people, and I love Polish names. That's why Lee's maiden name is Kowalski, and there's Sadowski. And Rinkowski, and I just love them. There's such a lilt to them, and I use them as often as I can in the books. I use a lot of Salem names. People, Jim Litka. Litka was one of the bridesmaids in my wedding was Jean Litka, and I borrowed her names. And then there was Anna Della Monica, and Della Monica is a delicious name too. I didn't even know Anna very well, but I liked her name. So I've been using surnames from Salem, and some of the people. We'll never know that some of them I use their whole name, but they probably will never know it. But it was fun to do it. I give them nice parts.
Yes, well, I think it's fun. And Rita, you put people's names, people you know, Do you?
I don't put people I know. I just, the names just come to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they are, like, my Aunt Sophia is a combination, I would say, of my mother and my grandmother. So.
Well, some very famous authors are now auctioning names so that they.
I do.
You do too.
I do it. The Women's History Project, which is kind of a favorite charity of mine, and they have an auction every year. So, I heard of Edith Maxwell, another Kensington writer, who did that, and I thought, well, that's a good idea. So I'll offer the naming rights to a book, and the first winner. Oh, I love this name. Because, you know, you don't know what kind of name you're going to have to use it if they bid high enough for it. But if there was ever a name for a New England friend of Aunt Ibby's, it was Louisa Abney Babcock. She shows up in this book, too. I haven't sent it to her yet, but I used her again. I sent her on a trip with Aunt Ibby, but she was so perfect.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it was just perfect. So there's four of them now, four different names. Two of them wanted the character to be named after one of their grandchildren.
Oh, cool.
And so I did that. So, I promise that it won't be a victim or a killer.
Yeah. Well, I told David Baldacci he can use my name anytime he wants. I will be the victim. I will be the killer. I think I prefer to be the femme fatale, you know. But so he's got my permission to use Patsy with a Z whenever he wants.
Maybe he will.
You cool. never know.
You never know.
Because I've never seen Patsy with a Z in a book.
No.
Yeah, right. And
I haven't.
I think it would be very distinctive, and I
agree.
I did not get a chance to offer it to Ian Rankin. Oh, I fell in love with Ian Rankin at BoucherCon. He's absolutely, when you talk about charisma, that guy has charisma. And if anybody wants a really, really exciting read, his books are great. And, of course, Lee Child was also there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Do you know, I took a picture with him, and it is really one of those times when you want to say, use that old line, how's the weather up there? I felt so short compared to him.
Yes.
I was so tiny, and he's so, so very tall. So BoucherCon was absolutely.
Is he Welsh also?
No.
No.
No. Birmingham. He's from Birmingham. Yes. Central England. A place I've been to many times. And so it was fun to meet him. Well, you know, I just want to thank both of you for being in here today. Carol J. Perry, his new book comes out today, Bells, Spells, and Murder. And what's your website?
www.caroljperry.com.
And you're on Facebook too?
I'm on Facebook, and there's a Nook and Kobo and Kindle all have book one on special this month.
Oh. Okay.
Good to know.
And they're all available at Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble has been very good to me, as has Kensington.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rita? Your books are available on?
They are available on Amazon.
On Amazon.
Yes.
Are you also on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook. As authors, we have to venture out into the land of social media. I'm on Facebook. And RitaMoreau.com is the website. Thank you,
okay.
Patsy.
Okay. Well, thank you both for being in here today. As I said, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And that's certainly true. And all you have to do is write. And then meanwhile, say something nice to someone. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thanks, Ed, so much for getting Rita's music up today and for everything that you do for me. We love you. Thank you. Bye-bye now.